Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Good Wednesday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Wolves. So glad you could tune in this morning. Hope your week is going well. My name's Alan Horton. You can follow me on Twitter at Wolves Radio and at Locked On Wolves, at Wolves Radio and at Locked On Wolves. Well, the Timberwolves did not have a practice yesterday. They'll get back on the floor today. And we've kind of hit that time during training camp when, you know, you get through the excitement of media day and the guys are back and you've got some storylines developing into the opening week, and then back to work over the weekend and the first couple of days of the week. You've got some things to talk about. We've kind of hit that lull, I feel like, before the preseason starts, and the Wolves will take the floor for the first time. They'll be in Kansas City taking on the Miami Heat on Saturday, and then that'll kick off the 6-game, 10-day road trip before they play a couple of preseason games towards the end of the month, the 19th and the 21st at Target Center, and then head off to Memphis and Sacramento to open the year on the road, and then the home opener November 1st against the Memphis Grizzlies. So I kind of feel like we've hit a little bit of a lull, and part of that is because the Timberwolves were off yesterday, their second off day of the of training camp so far. But like I said, they'll get back at it, and we'll have some more sound for you to play and let you hear from some of the players and from Tibbs a little bit. Hope that you've enjoyed that kind of coverage of training camp. We try to get you a little peek behind the curtain, you know, of what's going on and hearing from those guys. And we post a lot of sound on our SoundCloud page. You can check that out, SoundCloud.com/Wolves-Radio, where we post all of our interviews and all the sound for practice and everything. Great way to follow all that. Of course, Timberwolves.com. And then we've got the podcast as well. We've got a lot of Twitter. We've got a lot of different ways for you to kind of keep tabs on what's going on with the Timberwolves. A couple of things I just wanted to do today was answer a couple of tweets that have accumulated over the last week. And I want to kind of give you a story of how Tom Thibodeau, Timberwolves head coach and president of basketball operations, how he got to the NBA in 1989 as an assistant with Bill Musselman. It's a story he shared yesterday morning. We were hosting a little Q&A with about 100 people over at the Minneapolis Club, the Dunkers. Want to thank everybody that might be tuning in associated with the Dunkers. Great event. And I was emceeing it with Tom Thibodeau and Scott Layden, and we just talked some Timberwolves basketball. We talked some Team USA. But Tom Thibodeau really, you know, gave a nice long story about how he first met Bill Musselman, what Bill meant to him, and how he ended up in the NBA. And it's a story I wanted to pass along because I really think I always enjoy hearing the stories of how people got to where they are. And it doesn't have to be in the sports world. It could be in the business world or anywhere. I just think people have interesting journeys, and I think it tells you a lot about those people, learning about some of the experiences that they went through. So those are kind of the topics on the table here today. But let's get to a couple of tweets. First, from Joel Palish. Joel, thanks for tweeting at Wolves Radio. He is at TWolvesRube. He wanted to know about, you know, we've been talking a lot about the first unit and second unit. He simply wanted some clarification. Who's on that second unit, do you think? And who's on that first unit right now? Is it the same five as the end of last season? And the only thing I can say to that, Joel, is that as far as we know, that starting five from the end of last year hasn't really changed. We really don't have an idea yet because Tibbs has a closed practice. Really, even by the time the media is let in, including the broadcasters like myself, they're just doing some shooting drills at the end. They're working on their free throws, working on threes, all the different things that they do to prepare. So we really don't have an idea, and I don't think we will until these preseason games. And even then, you don't know whether or not that's going to be the lineup that'll be out there on the floor. So with that being said, we can only assume that that first unit, as for right now, includes Rubio, Levine, Wiggins, Jang, and Towns. The second unit, I think, you know, as Tibbs spoke a little bit about the second unit over the weekend, I think right now the first five off the bench or that five-man second unit would be Chris Dunn, Brandon Rush, Shabazz Muhammad, Nemanja Bjelica, and Cole Aldrich. I think that's kind of the second five. And the one guy that Tibbs did throw in there when talking about the second unit was Tyus Jones. So I think, I get the sense that he'd love to find a way to get Tyus on the floor. And that'll be something to keep an eye on here during the preseason. So, Joel, thank you very much for that question. How about Wiley E. Coyote? Yes, at the Wiley E. Coyote from Canis Hoopas fame. I love Canis Hoopas. I love, you know what I love most? I love reading all the Timberwolves blogs. They do such a good job, whether it's A Wolf Among Wolves, Canis Hoopas, On the Prowl, Howlin' T. Wolf. It's just, I think the Wolves fans have some of the best blogs in the league. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to try to beat some of the quality stuff that guys are putting out. And one of the things I like doing is Candace Hoopas after the game is reading a lot of the comments because they're either watching or they're listening and they're commenting on things, and some of the comments are just hilarious. And over the last few years, you know, especially after a lot of losses, it's kind of funny to go back and hear somebody comment or see somebody comment about something that I noticed as well, and they got to point it out, and it's just a lot of fun. But a couple of things from Wiley E. Coyote. He wanted to know about the NBA. Are they going to change the divisions? Because I had mentioned something about the Northwest Division. Are they going to change the preseason as well? And he just wanted to know whether that was something that the league was going to do, or is that just more my opinion? As far as the preseason goes, Wiley, I would say that that is a league thing. That's going to happen. It's just I think it's just a matter of time. The preseason will get shortened. Season will start a little bit earlier, and it'll be able to alleviate the schedule a little bit. As far as the changing of the divisions, I hope that's something they just do away with. I have a feeling they don't quite know what to go to. I mean, to me, as soon as the first week of the season starts, divisions mean nothing. They mean absolutely nothing. When I look at standings, I look at conference standings. That conference is what matters. The only thing divisions do, they are a rare tiebreaker. If two teams were to finish tied for a spot, if one of those teams is a division winner, that's the first tiebreaker. But the other thing they do is that all it does is guarantee who you're going to play four times. There are a number of other teams you play four times in the league, which has never made much sense. If you're going to have divisions, you have to put a priority on playing those teams in your division. The NBA for years has ranked below baseball, hockey, even football, where you don't play your division a disproportionate number of times to make the rivalries happen, to put more emphasis on your division. You only play those teams four times. Well, you play half the other teams in the Western Conference four times too. So playing Oklahoma City four times doesn't mean much when you're playing the Phoenix Suns four times or the Sacramento Kings four times. So I don't know what they're going to go to. I just wish they would abolish divisions altogether. All anybody looks at is conference standings. Just go to conference standings. And then, you know what? If you want to have some designated rivals that you always play four times, you know, fine, but it's never made sense in the Northwest Division anyway. I think Wolves fans could care less whether they play Portland four times or the L.A. Lakers four times. I don't think it matters. But if you want to develop, you know, have some rule in there so that the Lakers and Clippers are always guaranteed to play each other four times, I mean, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe Utah-Denver, maybe Golden State-Sacramento, maybe, to me, it's all about the conference. So that answers that question for you. The final one from Wiley goes about is talking about the D-League. Are the Wolves any closer to getting a D-League team? I have not heard any talk about that. You know, there are going to be 22 D-League teams this year, so there are eight teams without a D-League affiliate, and Minnesota is one of those, along with Atlanta, Washington, the L.A. Clippers, Milwaukee, Denver, Portland, and New Orleans. Now, a number of those teams do have plans for D-League teams in the next year or two. So that number is going to grow smaller and smaller. Eventually, there will be all 30 teams having D-League affiliates. The impact the D-League has been huge. 40% of players in the NBA have D-League experience. I mean, that's pretty significant. And I think you're going to see a system where everybody has their own D-League team. I think you'll eventually see a system where rosters are expanded, or you can protect a number of players so that you could sign them and keep them and control their rights while they play in the D-League, you know, kind of developing a system, you know, like baseball, where you could protect a handful of guys to make sure they just don't thrive under you, and then some other team sees that and just picks them right off. So I think that is coming, but I have not heard any talk about the Wolves a D-League team coming anytime soon. So Wiley E. Coyote, appreciate it. And finally, Kevin, who tweets at Wolves Radio from the account, at Kevin4213236, if you wanted that number, at Kevin4213236. He says, Alan, as a younger fan, I didn't even know about the Albany Patroons or the Bill Musselman connection. I'm from that New York area. Well, Kevin, thanks very much for the tweet. Yeah, the Albany Patroons, and we're going to get into this because that's where Bill Musselman and Tom Thibodeau first met, and then Musselman brought Tibbs to Minnesota back in 1989. But the Albany Patroons, I grew up about an hour away from Albany, so we would make a journey over there once in a while. There wasn't a whole lot to head over to that area for. But I did go to a Patroons game a long time ago, and the head coach at that time was a man named George Carl. And he had an incredible record there with the Patroons back in like the 1990, I think, is when I may have gone down there. They had a 50-6 record that year, 28-0 at home. And George Carl had a couple of guys that made it to the league. Mario Elie, Vincent Askew, fairly well-known name guys. But that the Albany Patroons have a rich history. You go back to 84, Phil Jackson was their head coach, took them to a CBA title. And in 1988, Bill Musselman won a CBA title. And listen to the names that Bill Musselman had on that championship-winning team that made it to the NBA, and then a couple of them obviously became very good coaches. Rick Carlisle, Scott Brooks, Todd Murphy, Tony Campbell, and Sidney Lowe. All those guys were on that Albany Patroons team. It's amazing the coaches they've had and the players they've had. And, of course, Isaiah Thomas pretty much did in the CBA, and that was the end of that. But it did spawn the D-League, and like we said, I think it's not too long before every team has their own D-League affiliate. So, Kevin, good question, and I think it leads right into our other talking point today. How did Tom Thibodeau get to the NBA? Well, let's go back, way back. Tom Thibodeau finished up his college career at Salem State. He eventually became an assistant coach there, and in the 84-85 season, he had been promoted after he had just been assistant for two or three years there. He became the head coach, and so he was all set to lead Salem State heading into the 85-86 season. And as he retold this story yesterday morning at the Minneapolis Club, he got an offer to join the Harvard basketball staff as an assistant coach. And it was only a couple of weeks before Salem State was set to take the floor. Tom said he didn't really know what to do, but the president at Salem State said, you know what, you're young, take chances, you never know where this could lead, really encouraged him to go for it. And even though that would leave him without a head coach at Salem State, but Tom always remembered that advice, and he went for it, and he went to Harvard, where he spent 4 years as an assistant coach. But that first season with Harvard, Ivy League a little bit different, starts a little bit later than some of the other programs in Division I basketball. And, you know, Boston at that time had this incredible collection of college basketball coaches. And it was right during that time when Tom Thibodeau went to Harvard, and he got a chance to go, you know, there are a ton of colleges around the Boston area, and one of them was at Northeastern. You know who the head coach was at Northeastern when Tom Thibodeau was there in 85 and 86? It was Jim Calhoun, who won three NCAA titles with Connecticut, Hall of Famer. He spent 14 years at Northeastern, and his last year was that first year for Tom Thibodeau at Harvard in 85-86. Tom said he went to a practice. He was blown away. Couldn't believe how Jim was doing things, learned a ton, tried to hang out as much as he could. Crosstown even more, Boston College. They had a guy named Gary Williams as their head coach who went on to win an NCAA title in Maryland. He spent 4 years at BC, and his last year was that 85-86 season. And Tom said, I went to a practice, got to check things out. Again, blown away by all the things Gary Williams was doing. And so then Thibodeau said he went down to Providence. And who was at Providence for 2 years was Rick Pitino. And Pitino, of course, took the Friars to the Final Four in the 86-87 season. So that 85-86 season was his first year there. So Tom went down, Pitino was nice enough to let him in, watch practice. Again, blown away. Guys doing different things. It just expanded Thibodeau's mind after coaching at Salem State. It just took things to a whole new level. So you had these three Hall of Fame coaches, and Thibodeau says he's heading to these practices as often as he can, trying to pick their brains, see what they're doing, trying to emulate what they're doing. And, you know, during this time in Boston, you know, and anybody who's grown up in New England, and specifically Massachusetts, the Boston Globe, especially the Sunday sports, it was the greatest thing ever. It may still be. I don't know. I haven't been around in a couple of decades. But, you know, the lists of people that wrote for the Globe and the sports department were legendary. I mean, you just, Will McDonough covering football, Lee Montville writing columns, Bob Ryan, Dan Shaughnessy, Peter Gammons, Bud Collins. I'm leaving a ton of people out, too. Most of the big names in sports writers on that East Coast at some point went through the Boston Globe. It was incredible. So here's Tom Thibodeau. He's sitting in Boston. He's there in Harvard for 4 years. He's getting this access to Jim Calhoun and to Rick Pitino and Gary Williams. And he reads a Bob Ryan column in the Boston Globe. And it's talking about, Bob is talking about this coach in Albany, New York. Head coach of the Albany Patroons. Guy who spent a little bit of time in the NBA, but he's been trying to work his way back. And he spent the last 3 years with these Albany Patroons in the CBA, putting up big numbers and winning games and winning a title in the CBA and trying to get himself back in the NBA. And so Tom says he read the article and was like, I gotta meet this guy. Now, Boston to Albany is not a quick trip. That's about 4 hours, maybe even a little bit more, 4 to 5 hours, right along the Mass Pike there. And so Tom had no connection to Bill Musselman. So he did call somebody that he knew who was an agent. He said, hey, do you happen to know Bill Musselman at all? Or do you know somebody who does? I read this article about him. I want to make contact with him. I want to see if I can come out and hang out for a practice. And the agent said, sure enough, yeah, I know him well. In fact, I'm going to go see him next week. The agent was based in Boston, so Thibodeau gets in the car. They go to Albany. They check out a practice. And again, Tibbs' mind just blown by the way Musselman is running practices, the things that he's doing. And a relationship develops. And anytime Tibbs can, he heads out. He heads east. He gets to Albany. He hangs out at practices. He's with Musselman doing camps in the off season, all the coaching clinics, all these different things. And then we get to 1988, and Musselman again is brought his a lot of, you know, quote unquote disciples with him to help him with these clinics and stuff. And he gets the opportunity with the Timberwolves. And Thibodeau, at this point, has worked his way up pretty close to Musselman. Obviously, there are a bunch of other guys that have more experience. And so Musselman is trying to fill out his staff going to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And Tibbs tells the story that it came down to one last spot. And it was going to go to another coach. And that coach was from the West Coast. And his son happened to be a senior in high school or a senior in college, something like that. And that coach didn't want to be away from his son that final year. I think it was a senior year in high school. And so he turned down the opportunity to go to the Timberwolves. And that opened the door for Tom Thibodeau to join Bill Musselman in Minnesota. And the rest, as they say, is history. He's never left the NBA after that. A couple of years with the Timberwolves, an advanced scout with the Seattle Supersonics, and then on the bench in Philadelphia and San Antonio and New York. And then to Houston, and then to Boston, and then obviously to Chicago the year off last year, and now in control of the Minnesota Timberwolves. So it really comes full circle. Yeah, Tibbs just talked about that story for about 15 minutes and just had everybody riveted. It was really interesting, and I think it gives you some insight into Tibbs and his mindset. He was always very focused on what he wanted to do. I think once he figured out that coaching was for him, it was about learning as much as possible. It was about going to talk to these different people, whether it was in basketball or not. He's developed great relationships over the years with guys like Tony La Russa, with guys like Bill Belichick. And, you know, obviously with his ties to all the different coaches, it's a very small world when it comes to, you know, and I think that's the case for any sport or business for that matter. It's a very small world. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody's got ties to one another. It's a really cool story, I thought, of how a guy gets to the NBA. And, you know, it was interesting because Tibbs said once he saw Musselman run a practice, he said, you know what, this is a different level. This is not the college game. This is the pro game. And Tibbs knew right there that he wanted to be a part of the pro game. Just saw Musselman do things in different ways. And he knew he wanted to make it to the NBA and not go back to the college game. So I thought that was a really interesting story. And it was a lot of fun the other morning at the Dunkers. And it's fascinating to hear where people come from. And I think it gives you some good insight into who they are. as people. So a little bit of an abbreviated non-sound edition of Locked On Wolves. I hope you enjoyed that. We'll touch base tomorrow morning with another edition of Locked On Wolves. We'll have some hopefully some fresh sound bites and stuff to talk about after today's practice as we head towards the preseason. It's finally getting there. You know, all these other teams have started to play one, two. By the end of the week, some teams will play three preseason games, and the Wolves have yet to take the floor. But we'll get there eventually, and it should be fun, and it's going to be weird for them to be gone for the better part of 10 days, but towards the end of the month, they'll be back. We'll get a couple of games at Target Center. Still don't know if there's going to be an open practice. Like I said earlier, I really thought that every team was going to have one of those. I know a bunch of teams have. We'll see if the Wolves still have some time left on the schedule to kind of fit that in, but we'll see how it progresses. Thanks so much for listening. Follow me on Twitter at Wolves Radio, at Locked On Wolves. Keep those tweets coming. Tell your neighbors, tell your friends all about Locked On Wolves. I appreciate you tuning in so much. Our numbers have been fantastic. If you're ever interested in advertising on this podcast, hit me up at Alan, A-L-A-N, dot Horton, H-O-R-T-O-N, at gmail.com. That's Alan.Horton@gmail.com. This has been another edition of Locked On Wolves, a part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.